This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. The great state of Wisconsin is home to the only master cheesemaking program outside of Switzerland. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
This week on a special bonus episode of Meat in 3, we find out why the bacon, egg, and cheese, that classic bodega sandwich, is popping up on menus of New York's trendiest restaurants.
We did a few iterations of it, and I was trying to fancify it. We tried the sausage, egg, and cheese, and then we tried to put shamula sauce on it. We used feta cheese, and we just like taking ingredients of the Mediterranean, if you will, and try to infuse it. But for me, it was like a car wreck.
Tune in to hear about the wild journey of the bacon, egg, and cheese, from deli to fine dining, on Meat in 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we're coming to you from Eataly Flatiron in New York City. It is Wednesday, September 25th, 2019. We will be airing the show in a couple weeks. This is the 231st episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a world-renowned chef and leading culinary figure, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to be generous. Give more than you receive, or better yet, give without expecting anything back. Be that person who goes the extra mile without intention. And I don't mean just monetarily, but also with kindness, with love, and with support. Go beyond one's expectations and surprise and delight with generosity. They say when you send goodness out to the world, eventually it will come back to you twofold. So do good as it will bring good and the feel goods. And isn't that what we all want? That's my tip today. Now, I am so honored to have the opportunity to interview my guest. It is Massimo Bottura, world-renowned Italian chef and restaurateur. With over 20 years of experience helming acclaimed 3 Michelin star Osteria Francescana in Modena, Italy, which has held the number one spot on the world's 50 best restaurant list. And thanks to his innovative energy and social sensitivity, Massimo is considered one of the world's leading culinary figures. In 2015, he decided to apply his creative energy to the issue of food waste and dedicate himself to community projects, founding Food for Soul along with his wife, Laura Gilmar. They also recently opened Francescana at Maria Luigia, an Italian country house in Modena, plus many other projects. Massimo is also the author of Never Trust a Skinny Italian Chef and Bread is Gold, the first book to take a holistic look at the subject of food waste. Welcome to the show. Hi, Massimo.
Hi. Hi, everyone. I love your tip. Actually, it's an amazing tip. It's what you need in life, you know? Wake up and just open yourself to the other. First thing you have to say, with a real meaning, buongiorno, good morning. If you really mean it, it's gonna, a lot of doors and hearts, they're gonna be open for you and ready to listen to you.
Thank you. My tip was inspired by you. And I wrote it thinking of you. I really did.
Thank you.
I thought it would be fitting for this show, knowing a bit about what you do and your generosity. So thank you.
You're welcome.
I like to start out with my guests a bit about their background and finding out how and why they got into this crazy culinary industry we're in. And so what was your childhood like? Was that a major influence of your direction into the, being a chef?
I think so. I grew up in a very large family in a part of the food valley in Emilia Romagna. And my mom came from south of Italy, the hills outside of Modena. And their brothers, they own a cheese company, like very small cheese company where they make Parmigiano Reggiano. And my father comes from north of Modena, close to the Po River, the valley, the flatland. And they own land. And so growing up, we had the opportunity to have all these products from south, north. And it's like just crazy how a kid can grow and enjoy and experience the pleasure to sit around the table and share a meal with a large family and beautiful product. So I think this is the key point. It's the first seed that was planted in my mind, and that, you know, 20 years later, growing up, you know, became like a big tree. And you know, I gave up the law school to become a chef. This was 1985.
And where did you gain culinary experience? What were, did you have some mentors?
Yeah, growing up, I always found the kitchen in my home as the safety place, because you know, my grandmother or my mom was like defending me. I was the younger of the whole family, so and I was a real troublemaker, so you know, my safety place was the kitchen, because you know, my older brother, they wanna have me and kick me. But you know, my grandmother was always defending me, even if I was wrong. So I always felt the kitchen was the safety place in my life, and still now is the place where I go and hide when I have problems, or when I, you know, I'm troubled in my mind. And you know, that's the place where you relax, you get clear, and you always find a solution. So that's what it was. Then at one point, the a simple interest start growing and became a passion. And at that point, when you have a passion, you are on fire with passion, with something as contemporary art or music, or you know, it's something that lives with you. I always say, if you ask me what I'm doing every day, you know, I live my passion, I ride my passion, I don't live the metaphysical of my life, you know, because cooking, listen to music, have, you know, watch or buy contemporary art is my passion. It's my passion. I steal idea from the artist, that's how the creative process began for me. Art has became my landscape of ideas.
So you opened Osteria Francescana in 1995.
Yeah.
What did you want to be a restaurateur? How did that come about? Did you just find a location and just say, I'm ready to do this on my own? And then you've been running this restaurant, which is, as we were saying before the show, it's very hard to get into now. A long wait list, very successful. Been on the top 50 list many times in when the top contender is in number one. But from what I understand, the beginning wasn't so easy or so well received.
No, exactly. But I start much before. With a small restaurant in the countryside of Modena, just 10 kilometers from Modena, and you know, where you know, I had the opportunity to make a lot of mistakes, I had the opportunity to meet many great chefs. And as Lidia Cristoni, like an old Razdora, you know, Razdora means... now Razdora, you have like a restaurant here in New York called Razdora. By Stefano Secchi, that is like, he's a guy who worked for me and he loved the idea of Razdora and learned how to make pasta. Razdora is the name of the lady who take care of the house, you know? She take care of the economy, she take care of the food, she take care of everything. And Lidia Cristoni, she was taking care of me at that time. She teach me all humbleness, first of all, and how to prepare and to be professional in with the line before service. And then I had the opportunity to meet this amazing French chef, two Michelin star in the 80s, and work and stage with him for a couple of years. And I learned the classic preparation, French preparation. Then I met Alain Ducasse. And he asked me to come in Monte Carlo. At that time, at like 89, 90, he had just that Monte Carlo place and in the Hotel de Paris. And it was a dream because at that time, Ducasse was considered like one of the three best chefs in the world. And I've learned so much, the traditional cuisine and the farm to table. So he was like the first one who was pointing the finger on markets and say we should really take care of our markets or our farmers, bring the food from there, buy and directly into the pan, directly into the tables. And that was like a revolution in France at that time. And then I spent 1 year in New York. I met Lara. She came back with me and we decided to open Osteria Francescana in 1995.
Yeah.
But we start the restoration by ourselves because we didn't have the money to pay people to restore. We were scrubbing, you know, the floor, the walls, the painting, you know. It's like, it was fun.
I heard Laura speak, I think it was last year at the Welcome Conference in New York. And I met her too, and she was amazing. And hearing her story in the background of how you guys met in New York, and
it was a serendipity. You know, we started the same day, same shift. It was like the 8th of April, 1993. The shift from 2 to closing time. And she was working behind the bar. I was working in the kitchen. The kitchen was open, so we were like, we had a great time.
Yeah. So then, I mean, years passed. You're working. You're running this restaurant. And I know it's a very hard industry to be a part of. And then you get a Michelin star, and eventually you get three Michelin stars. So how...
That's more difficult.
Oh, really?
Three Michelin stars.
Yeah, well, keeping up seven
restaurants eight restaurants in Italian history in the last 50 years, you know, happened. You know, never in Emilia-Romagna. So it's like, we made history. So it's like three Michelin stars. Be recognized by the Italian, recognized by the chef, the French, is not easy. You know that.
Yeah.
No, we are cousin, but we are very competitive. And it was a dream for me because I remember when I said to my father that I was like leaving law school, and I said, you see, he was very upset. You see, I'm gonna bring in Emilia, in Modena, the three Michelin star, just to say something, no? But it's always been in my mind. And in 2011, the dream became reality, you know?
And how did things change? I mean...
No, but our job is all about hard work. People think we are rock star, but we are not. It's all about hard work, every day, every day, every day. An obsession. It's obsession. The secret of success is obsession. Stay there, stay in track, play, you know, like a super soccer player or like a F1 driver. Keep your body and your mind straight. And, you know, focus on building an amazing team. The team is everything in our job. It's not me, it's the team. And keep the team together as a family. This is another amazing thing that Lidia Cristoni teach me mm-hmm. back in the days. And, you know, learn the lessons from everyone. Travel a lot with your mind and your eyes open, but never forget who you are and where you come from. So this is these are good suggestions for any young, you know, kid who wants to be a chef. But always remember, it's all about hard work.
I'm thinking they're good tips for my future shows. You're giving me tips.
Be humble.
But and I know the art has, well, it's inspiration for your dishes as well.
Yeah, yeah. Art is what really makes visible the invisible. It's we live in Modena. We don't even see the cathedral from the door of Osteria Francescana, but. So we don't have like beautiful landscape like the Dolomites or the Gulf of Sorrento, but we have culture, and so art became our motivational force. Is what really shaped the landscape of our ideas, and as Picasso was always saying, copy yourself is a sterile exercise, but steal from the other, it's extremely important to evolve. So I've learned that lesson, and I'm really into stealing idea from the artist and transform my passion into edible bites, sitting on centuries of history, like very Italian. My cuisine is very Italian, even mm-hmm. if it's abstract, but filtered by a contemporary mind. That's very important, because what I do, I always respect my past, but I look at my past in a critic way, never in a nostalgic one, to bring the best from the past into the future. This is our job.
And I think you're doing it very, very well. On that note, let's take a little break and we'll come back and we'll talk more with Massimo Bottoro. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that 90% of Wisconsin's milk is made into cheese? And this is not just any milk. When Swiss, German, and Italian cheesemakers first settled into Wisconsin, they chose their new home because of the special terroir of the region. Its soil and water are nurtured by the goodness of glacial sediment, and those elements lend themselves to the very best milk. Today, Wisconsin produces 25% of all cheeses made in the U.S., and Wisconsin cheeses have won more awards than any other state or country in the world. How did they do it? Wisconsin cheesemakers combined their heritage and tradition with nonstop innovation. They were the first state to establish cheese grade standards and the first to require that every cheese plant be overseen by a licensed cheesemaker. Wisconsin is the only place outside of Europe where one can pursue an elite master cheesemaker certification. All of these impeccably high standards mean Wisconsin produces more than 48% of the nation's specialty cheese.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is world-renowned Italian chef and restaurateur Massimo Bottoro, most known for 3 Michelin star Osteria Francescana in Modena, Italy, and also most known for Food for Soul. So let's talk about Food for Soul. This is a nonprofit organization which you launched, I believe, in
2015.
Yeah. So what inspired you to create this amazing organization?
But was we had to confront the Universal Exposition that was coming up. And we were in 2014 and we were discussing about that. And I thought it was an opportunity to show what the chef can do together. The Universal Exposition in Milan had the theme Feed the Planet. So we start confronting numbers and research what was going on the planet. I was very, I'm really very sensitive about that. And so I saw the number at the FAO, and we produce food for 12 billion people, and we are seven on Earth, and 860 million people, they don't have anything to eat. We waste food, 1.3 billion tons of food that we produce. 33% of the production goes to waste in 1 second. Food that is just surplus food is not waste at all. And so I said to all my colleague friends, we have to be together and show the world that a chef can really make the difference in such an opportunity for us. So we decide to feed the planet our own way and create this soup kitchen. But it's a different soup kitchen. It's a soup kitchen where beauty is the main part of this, because we want to, this is a cultural project in which we rescue the surplus food and we transform into amazing meals in a most beautiful environment. So the church in Milan, they gave us this abandoned theater from 1930, and we transform it with the help of architects, of designer, of artists, in one of the most beautiful places in Milan right now, and in which we host migrants, refugees, homeless from the most neglected neighbor in Milan, Greco, on the side of the refugees' house. We didn't know what to do at that time. We just guessed that we could make it. So a track, like a refrigerated track, was like going through the Universal Exposition, rescue the inevitable food waste from the Universal Exposition and from the old village, and was coming in Greco. What we were doing, we were unloading the tract every morning, all these, the most influential chef in the world, they were flying from everywhere, unload the tract in the morning and cook for kids for lunch, and homeless, refugees, migrants for dinner. It was such an explosive idea that became, one of maybe the most important idea behind the Universal Exposition in 2015. So I found myself speaking at the G7, talking with all these delegation from all over the world. Even the White House came, and Michelle Obama, and it was like explosive. But once the Universal Exposition closed, I thought it was over, no? We left the soup kitchen better than before to the volunteers. They were keep feeding the people every night. But the mayor of Rio de Janeiro, the Gasomotiva things, and a beautiful journalist called Alexander Forbes, contact me and say, we want the project in Rio de Janeiro for the Olympics. So I said, why not? But we have to create a foundation. So me and Lara, we create a Food for Soul, in a foundation in which we raise money to open this kind of projects. We opened Rio since then Modena, Bologna, Naples, London, Paris, and now we are here in New York because the Rockefeller Foundation gave us a big grant to help us to find the opportunity to start opening also in North America. Now we have Mexico that is almost ready. the mayor of Montreal gave us a space, and we are very close to close something in the United States. But I can't say, you know, it's like, I'm scaramantic.
well, you said New York City, United States.
New York is my, you know, yeah. It's a priority for me because New York is New York. It's yeah. where I met Lara, is my home away from home. So it's like, I really have a special place in my heart for New York.
Oh, it's impressive. And I visited Milan in 2015 to yeah. attend the World Expo and to dine at your restaurant, which I'm lucky I was able to, and I went solo and had the most amazing experience. I don't know if you remember this, but you actually sent me home with Parmigiano Reggiano. but I remember, I think, you know, launching it then, I mean, looking back, I think it was a smart move.
Yeah.
And to see how you've grown and your success and that you've had so many chefs involved as well, that's a big component of it.
In Milan, 65 of the most influential chefs in the world.
Yeah.
Then we really play local. Like Naples, for example, there are all chefs from Campania, from down south. It's like, they are so, you understand, it's like they are so warm and ready to give, it's like unbelievable. We're having so many people. Paris, all the three Michelin star are coming to see what was going on in there, and they like live with such a joy in their art. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful project. It's much more what you receive than what you give.
Yeah, no, it really is. So this is a good segue to my question on my last episode. On episode 230, I had the opportunity to interview Thomas Keller, chef and proprietor of Thomas Keller Restaurant Group. So I asked him to ask you a question.
Yeah.
So his question, and I'm gonna read his intro up to it because it's give you a sense of where he's coming from. So Thomas said, "It's hard to come up with a question for any chef or Massimo, but I'd like to recognize the quality of the man that he is and his sense of generosity and responsibility. The kitchens that he's opened up to help feed the homeless is extraordinary and should be a model for the ability for a community to feed the hungry. So my question is there a way for you to build a platform that other people then could copy, like a franchisable sort of thing? So what you've learned through the process, if that somehow could be given to others to do what you've done with helping the unfortunate in their homes."
Amazing question.
Yes.
And this is exactly what is going on right now. And we have many relations with amazing people from Amazon, Google, Salesforce, and they're building a platform in which we can share what's going on in all the refettorio, but most all the volunteers, thousands of thousands of thousands of people, they believe in our cause and they want to help. It's unbelievable. You're never gonna imagine how many people they want to help. They want to be part of this. And this is something that gives me so much energy and hope for the future. You know, there's a study that is shown everywhere, even in the Museum of Future, in which the vision and the provision for the future is for 2050, the people in need, they're gonna be less than half. So 400 million compared to 860 million. So the revolution is now. We have to act now. We don't know yet because we are acting in the present, but maybe we are creating an incredible movement for the future. So let's keep going and fight for that.
Yeah, well, I want to say power to you. Like, it's amazing. It's really amazing.
Thank you.
So what advice, one more question before we take another break. What advice would you have for someone who's a younger generation who's looking to be a chef or restaurateur?
There's already there a very important humanistic revolution. It's no more about those crazy technique that we were like to show off how good you are in the kitchen. We all know that. We all know the technique. And just work hard, focus, put the ethic close to the aesthetic. Stay close to your farmers, fishermen, cheesemaker, care about those people, because they are the people that pay a fair price for the ingredients, for those ingredients that you're gonna serve, because the emotion are in there. So it's not about just a good meal. It's about to feed people with emotions. That what really makes a difference in life.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take another break here, and we're going to come back, and we are going to play my speed round game and talk some industry news. So stay with us. This is Only Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe, taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Tickets available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Massimo Bottura, and it is time for my speed round game. It's going to be fun. So what this is I name a couple things, and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Chocolate or?
So I'll say chocolate or vanilla, and then you say chocolate or whatever your favorite is.
All right. Chocolate and vanilla.
Okay.
Both.
Fabulous. There's no, the thing with this game is there are no rules, there's no right, there's no wrong. It's just fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
I'm always leave the chance for the chef to choose whatever he wants to feed me.
I hear you. Small plates or large plates?
Small plates. Large plates are boring.
I think you could probably do good art on a larger plate, though. I'm picturing your what's it? The beautiful psychedelic meal.
Yeah.
But we'll go with the small. Okay. How about communal table or chef's counter?
Oh, communal table. It's what we are doing now in Casa Maria Luisa. We create another revolution. We didn't know what to do. I bought three tables from Mendini, like beautiful Italian designer who designed this table for the Universal Exposition, the Refettori of Milan. And I put it in a carriage space, and I decided to break all the walls and create a kitchen to cook in front of the people. And now we are hosting every night 24 people in Casa Maria Luisa, just in the middle of the country of Modena. And we cook for them in front of the same iconic dishes of Osteria Francescana, in front of them, and mm-hmm. they are part of the whole experience. and they are sharing the table, three communal table. So 24, 8, 8, and 8. We didn't know what to do. Well, you know, bring the refectory experience into the fine dining is like, whoa, so radical, no? But first Saturday, we were like, we jump. First Saturday, after 3 days of service, 8 people, they were sitting at the same table. 2 8 Americans. 2 very liberal from Boston. 2 very Republican from Texas. Mm. 4 friends from Boulder, Colorado. They were smoking pods in the park, you know, like so crazy. So they were sitting at the same table. I said, this tonight is gonna be the last night of this experience. At the end of the meal, they made a reservation. Next year, same date, same people, same table.
Wow.
So this is what I mean, sharing a meal around the table. The power of food and the joy of sharing a table together. Leave your phone on the side and talk to each other. That's amazing.
Yes. A friend, colleague of mine, Keith Durst, I know was recently there and had a fabulous experience.
Yes. And yes. Everyone leaves so happy.
Yes.
Wow, they switched numbers, they became friends, but the most incredible people, so different from one from another, you know, amazing.
Amazing. Of course I want to go. Okay, let's do a few more. Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
All-inclusive.
Pizza or pasta?
Can you ask an Italian pizza or pasta? Both, of
course.
That's
my unfair one, I guess.
Yeah.
Another unfair one will be something like tortellini walking on broth, or 5 ages of Parmigiano Reggiano, I dropped the lemon tart.
How can you choose this?
Well, how do you, first of all, how do you come up with these names? Is it all just, I don't know, different times, or in the middle of the night you wake up and you're like, there you go.
A short story, you know, the title of a very complicated and articulate creative process, and you know, it's about focus on what you eat, not just eating tortellini, but what kind of tortellini and how you want to serve it. It's about the slowly aging process in Emilia-Romagna, serving one ingredient, and actually 2 ingredients, the Parmigiano Reggiano and the thyme. The thyme that evolve that ingredient and transform that ingredient in 5 different ingredients. And the third one is be free to make mistakes. Mistakes are beautiful. Mistakes, they make you look human. And they open the heart of the people that are sitting there. That's why I say I love to feed people with emotion. Is the Oops, I Dropped Lemon Tart is like, it's about poetry. It's about keep that space in your crazy schedule life open for poetry, in which you can jump and imagine to serve in a 3 Michelin star a broken lemon tart.
And it's delicious.
That's the first thing, you know. Food has to be good and healthy. Then everything else. But first of all, good and healthy.
Okay, I have 2 more with the game. Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate. And dessert. Both.
Both. Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Modena?
Well,
another hard one.
No, it's to me is as I was saying yesterday night that the secret of my life is living in Modena and stay there experience the small town life. But in the moment you feel so comfortable in that life, leave and be in New York or Tokyo or Hong Kong. And New York again, because you know, New York has always a special place for me. And for me, it's like, this is the secret. It's like a couple of days there, 3 days on the other side, 2 days there, 3 days on the other side of the world. It's the way to keep evolving, to stay fresh with your mind. And that's what really makes the difference in life.
Yeah, well, I think it ties into why I love to travel too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. Traveling with your your ears and your eyes open, no, to learn, keep learning, keep evolving. Ah, it's the secret. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. That was the game. And we are now being joined by Italian chef Antonia Clocvin, from Michelin-starred restaurant Le Argine a Venco in Gorizia, Italy.
Yes.
Hopefully I'm saying that correctly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So this is the industry news part of the show where we talk about something happening, an article. Before we get to that, I thought we'd talk a little about the event that we're at now at Italy in New York City. So do you both want to talk a little about what that involves and what this event means to you?
Well, this is a great opportunity, you know, being here in New York. I come from a little, little town in the northeast of Italy, so being in New York, it's such a great occasion for me. And seeing new people, but also surrounded by with this beauty, you know. This city is amazing, exciting for me.
So what events are happening over the couple days here
New York? I had a demo classroom yesterday. I could, you know, tell something about my restaurant and about my vision of ingredients. And tonight I will have eight hands dinner. So I will do the main course for tonight.
Wonderful. What about you, Massimo?
You know, it's 10 years that I'm coming here, and it's like I don't want to lose the opportunity to come in New York and share with all the guys from Identità Golosa this kind of amazing feeling that we have. You know, we did the whole, you know, we picked all our friends, we share with all our friends here, from Eric Ripert to Danielle, Dave Chang, everyone. And now, yesterday we did this beautiful class up on the roof of Italy, and I brought with me all the chefs from Osteria Gucci, Franceschetta, Francescana, Casa Maria Luisa, because I want them all here, part of this event, share with them the opportunity to come in New York and make them look like, all right, guys, this is New York, so don't get lost in your everyday life. Write your everyday life. It's not, we have to do something much better than there was like the United Nations conference in which I attend Monday. And, you know, it was really touching and actually I left kind of worried to see what was going on there. And yesterday night I did this dinner at Sotheby's because Sotheby's asked me to curate a contemporary art show in New York. So that's my dream, you know.
Yeah.
It was like being in New York, you know, and curate a contemporary art show. Whoa, what's going on? Tonight I'm here and doing nothing. I let my chef to do everything. I just want to enjoy the dinner that Antonia and all the others are preparing tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to be at the dinner tonight, the
dine
around.
Good.
And lots of leading chef ladies cooking tonight. So the article that I have was in the Sun Daily, and it's entitled "The Gender Gap and the Future of French Gastronomy Addressed at the World's 50 Best Restaurants Forum." And so I was talking about this a few recently in Paris. There was a forum tied to the 50 best list, which comes out annually. I know you're familiar with it. And there were panelists. There were five top male chefs involved, and it came up in conversation about female representation at this panel, and also on the list, which there's been criticism over the years that there isn't enough females maybe on the list. They've created the world's best female chef award, which, you know, people have their opinions if it's a great thing or if it's not a great thing. So I thought I wanted to hear what you guys thought of all of this.
You want to talk? I don't want to talk. No, I don't want to talk because it's so stupid that I don't even want to start a discussion about this. And, you know, it's like, it's not that I'm here because I'm like, and I brought Jessica Roosevelt from Canada, that she's the chef at Maria Luisa, or Karime Lopez, she's the chef at Osteria Gucci, or my wife, that she's the president of Food for Soul. I'm here they are here because they deserve to be here, because they have the quality to be here, because they are much more talented than any other to be that in that position. So I don't understand what we are talking about. I really don't. And I don't even want to start a discussion like this. So.
Well, I think that if only one man is behind me in a list because I'm a woman, I lose, you know? So, of course, I want what I deserve, but I don't want to steal it from a man who is better than me. I want to go for the prize with the same possibilities that a man have. We come from a country that is, I think, for a little bit hard for women in every single job, not only in the cuisine. I think the kitchen are a place of freedom for me and of meritocracy, because the guests are not interested if you're ugly, if you're beautiful, if you have a good makeup, or if you are polite. They only look the dish and the taste. And I think that maybe I have chosen kitchen as my field because of that. I love this. And I don't want anybody to steal from me this freedom, of course.
Well said. It is what it is. We don't have to...
It's such a silly, ignorant, stupid things to discuss that to me is like drive me nuts, you know, because I could never ever have done what I've done without all this. And I had told, and I answered to Marco Pierre White when he did that first article on The Guardian, and like I said, I don't know what's going on here or there, but to me, when for my personal experience, when we start opening in a serious way to women, chefs that like brought some sensibility, some much deeper sensibility.
I'm not sure of that.
I'm talking about the experience because you know, I've seen the experience that was going on in Osteria Francescana at that time. I'm talking about 6-7 years ago.
Okay.
You know, for us, from we were number 5 at that time, and you know, the whole scenario changed, and it was such an amazing and smart things to do. But what Antonio was like referring was the last things that this Italian chef, old guy, said in an interview. It was like so stupid and yes. silly that I don't even want to start a discussion.
Yes, but I think that, you know, women, talented women, we have to look for them, you know, and I think maybe women who are in my position can do something for the new generation of women and help them in a way to erase, to grow. And I think that's beautiful, because even male chef can do the same, because the numbers of women in the kitchen are not enough. If the talent is mm-hmm. divided in two, because 50% of the talent is is women, of course, and in the kitchen they are not 50%. They are much, much less than 50%. This means that we lose some of the talent that we have in this world, and we have to help this talent to come up. And I think that this will be our future, helping talent to erase, to grow.
Yes, and I agree. And I know I've seen, you know, many chefs, female chefs, speak about, you know, it's just about being a chef. Like, it's not about being a female chef or a male chef. It's a chef's a chef. Yes. And I agree with that. So...
That's why, to me, it's not worth to talk about.
Okay,
but we have to worry about for the young female chefs. I think, in a way, you know, to help them. Don't you think we are responsible for them?
I'm totally into talent and not into genders. You know, I'm like, I don't care if you're like man, woman, gay, whatever. You know, you are talented or you're not talented. And if I look to all the restaurants we have, I could say that there are more female than men. I just think about Franceschetta right now. They're like 75% of female, 25% of men. In my personal Franceschetta. In Gucci Osteria with Karime, they're like, they could be 50-50. Mm-hmm. In Osteria, 60-40.
Okay.
You know, it's like, this is my personal experience. And they're growing, you know, they're growing because they're amazing. You know, I see things I see things that they're getting much better than 20 years ago, for example.
Yes, it is. But if you go to the schools, you understand that women young chefs, they don't do the same thing that male cooks do at the same age in Italy. We have big problems during their 20s and during their 30s. That's because of the... I don't know, maybe our society, but I think there's a lot to do in the schools to help young cooks. And I want to do that because they need help. Because then I don't receive CVs from women. So I'm one of the most important women chefs in my country, and I don't receive the CVs. It means something for me.
Yeah, and I think getting this conversation and this voice out when there are articles like this is important, you know?
Yeah.
So.
No, I agree, but.
Because some people have, you know, there's an opinion enough that an article like this gets written. Mm. So.
Massimo Bottura, as other chefs in Italy, very famous, they have really many women involved in their companies. And that's really a strong thing that was never happened in my country. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm aware that our society is really below those numbers. And I want to increase them because really the talent is both sides, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Another thing that is very important that makes me, that it comes in my mind is like the old office of Food for Soul So I'm talking about the one who manage all the chefs in the world for the refettorio are 100% women. But not because there were no men curriculum or stuff like that. Because right. when we did the interview,
they were the
women,
qualified.
They were yeah. much, you know, much better than, you know, the man curriculum. And also the vision, their vision about feeding the people, managing this, raise a new opportunity, fighting food waste, be alert on what was inclusion in society. It's different. It's different. They're 100%. And they are managing all the most important chefs in the world, like Christina Reni, and talks with yeah. and organize Michel Bras, Alain Passard, Alain Ducasse, as a perfect manager. So it's not just about in the kitchen, but it's about in the office, it's about in the room, it's about everywhere.
Jill Conklin is a friend of mine. I know she's on your team.
She's my buddy.
Fabulous. And she doesn't know that I'm doing this interview now, but I will be getting in touch with her this week and letting her know.
She's
wonderful.
She did for in United States much more than what I was expecting in yeah. With you know, all her job and now deeply she went with using patience with all these giant companies and wait 1 week and 2 weeks and explore all the different, you know, possibilities to open New York, Chicago, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles.
So you know, wonderful.
It's yeah. wonderful, yeah. wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's
right now she's main too. Part of my, you know, she's the one who I, yeah. who I confront when I have a problem.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
She's
amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. Really great.
Yeah. And very passionate.
Yeah, well, passion is a big part of this, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, I think you have to have passion to do, yeah. to be successful. So, well, thank you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're going to take one more break. We're going to come back. We'll have my solo dining experience, and we will do the final question. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. This week, it's at Disfrutar. The location, Carrer de Valerol in Barcelona, Spain. The concept, a modern European restaurant with a creative cuisine meant to disfrutar, which means delight. The chefs and owners, Oriol Castro, Edouard Chatruc, and Matea Casanas, who previously worked at legendary El Bulli prior to its closure in 2011. So why did I go? Because it's a highly ranked restaurant with an excellent reputation, and I was excited to experience a menu that was influenced by El Bulli. I never made it to that restaurant. So my experience. So I had a reservation for one for a very late lunch. At the front, I was greeted by the hostess. I was given a tour through the restaurant, and you walked through the open kitchen. I was able to meet two of the chefs along the way, and I was seated at a nice two-top along the banquette, facing the dining room near the kitchen. Service had started a little slow. I think I came in right at the peak of lunch, but my feast soon began, and the staff was absolutely lovely. Many servers, many people in the staff come by welcoming me and serving the different dishes. There's a lot of tableside preparation, very unique elements for the senses, and the entire meal was extremely entertaining and moved quite fast for a long meal. So what did I get? So they have four tasting menu options. They have a Gran and Disfrutar Classico menu, and they have a Gran or Disfrutar Festival menu, and the classic is the classics, and the festival is more modern dishes. So I actually asked for a combo, which they obliged, and actually, thinking back when I went to Osteria Francescana in 2015, I had asked for this as well, and I a little combo of your past dishes and more modern dishes, and I believe you have that now with the contemporary traditional combined. So that's where I got the idea, and it worked. So I went with a larger one, which was a lot of food. I mean, I'm going to tell you how many courses. It was 30 courses. The other one's 25. Yes. So my take, really wonderful. Some of my favorite dishes were the pancino filled with beluga caviar, crispy seaweed ravioli. There was a carbonara egg with mushrooms and truffle, and for dessert, a cheesecake cornet and a fossil with cocoa pulp. It was a lot of food. Actually, I skipped dinner that night, and this was the next day I went to lunch at La Cova Fumato, which I talked about on my previous episode, and I did mention how I skipped dinner because it was so full for lunch. So the ambiance was, it's a simplistic, serene ambiance. It's a reflecting Mediterranean with lots of natural light. It's a white square space. They have an outdoor terrace and an open kitchen. The front is a bit darker and narrower, but it's kind of cool that you walk through the kitchen. You're actually walking through the pass to get to the back. So it's perfect for a serious or adventurous food lovers. Interesting tidbit, Disfrutar is currently ranked number 9 in the world's 50 best restaurants list. In 2018, it was ranked 18 as the highest new entry award, so it is moving up pretty fast. Personal fun fact, so when I left the restaurant, two of the chefs were standing on the street after shift, and I was able to get a selfie with them and thank them for lunch. The third chef actually runs their more casual restaurant, Compatir de Cadix in Costa Brava. So the cost of this meal was $219. That's converted to U.S. and including tax gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, I would. I'd love to try more contemporary dishes. I'm sure they're always working on new things, and I'd probably do the smaller menu because it was a lot of food. The website is just frutabarcelona.com. Have you two chefs been there? Have you been, Massimo?
You know, I work with these three guys when I was at the Bulli.
Oh, really?
In 1999 and 2000. And Matteo was one of my chef de partie. And it was really tough, but so cool. We had such a great time. Orioli is he was working in the special atelier with Albert Adria, the Ferran's brother. And they were developing all this technique and working. He's a genius. Orioli is super genius. He's such a great guy. And Disfrutar is a beautiful, beautiful place. So you have to go.
It was a special experience, yeah. And I'm glad I went. Good. And the one thing I do like about going solo is that you really take it all in. You're not distracted by anything.
I agree.
There's a lot happening. Yeah. There's a lot of these tableside presentations things. Yeah, so it was wonderful. I would recommend it as well.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, it's time for the final question. So my next guest is Ben Chekroon. He is the director de salle at Le Bernardin, which is Chef Eric Repair and Maggie Lecose's four-star seafood restaurant here in New York City.
Yeah.
Massimo, what would you like to ask Ben?
All right. First of all, I celebrate the day after we won number one in New York at Le Bernardin. So I'm very familiar with this, and Ben is a super guy. It's good that you interview also service staff like that. That's something very special, because before we were talking about this, about women, men, genders in general. But for a long time we have, and still now we still have problem in the service. Everyone wants to be a chef right now, and I think I stopped talking about this. I was supporting Noi di Sala, is an association with all the best, you know, people from the room and from the service things. And since the beginning, because I think the experience of a guest is like 50 and 50. 50% it's about the food, 50% it's about the room, the service. It's like if you have a mediocre restaurant with a great service, the people, they want to come back. But if you have a great food with a very bad service, they're never gonna come back. So the point is, I want to ask him what you are doing, and you agree with Will Guidara to keep evolving this idea of service and push the young generation to get deep into service and make them proud to work in a room and not just in a kitchen.
Yes. Fabulous, I will ask. And he is fabulous.
He is fabulous. He is fabulous.
Yes. Yeah. And you're fabulous.
I'm a fabulous somebody.
No, seriously, you are. I'm a huge fan. I always say the name wrong. The Gelinas Shuffle.
Gelinas.
Gelinas. Do you remember doing that too back at Momofuku Ko?
Yeah, of course. And it's when I created Autumn in New York.
We did the Autumn in New York that day. I was also there. It was near. It was about a month or so after when I was at Osteria Francescana in Italy, and so I had those two back to back experiences with your food.
It's cool.
Yeah,
it is so cool. And so actually, I was texting with Sue today.
Oh, Sue.
Yeah, and she's like, she's so amazing. I was like, wow, you're in New York and you don't come and visit me? Come on, give me a kiss. You know, it's like we have such a special relation with Dave and all the team, and Sue, she's running the restaurant in such an amazing way.
Yeah. Well, I feel extremely lucky that I've had experiences of meeting you, of having your food, being at your restaurant, and now doing this interview today.
Thank you.
Wishing you much continued success.
I'll see you when we're gonna open New York City Refettorio.
I can't wait. I'm so
at the opening. You're gonna come and you're gonna volunteer.
Yes.
And then you're gonna write or talk about something like that. But first of all, you're gonna volunteer.
Yes, you got it.
Good.
It would be my pleasure.
Done.
So thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you.
Everything.
Thank you.
My guest today has been Massimo Bottoro of three Michelin star Osteria Francescana in Modena, Italy. And he's also the founder, along with his wife, Laura Gilmer, of Food for Soul. Their websites are osteriafrancescana.it and casamarialuigia.com and foodforsoul.it. Thank you all. You can find me on social media at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. Websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com and AllInTheIndustry.com. You can also find our archive shows at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks again to Massimo, Antonio, and to Julia, who helped set up this interview. I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next week with a live show. I hope you'll tune in then. And thank you for being part of All in the Industry. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.